tempo.
Hey, this is DJ Detour with my show Behind the Bit that will be on today from 3 to 4. And today for our first segment, I am going to give everyone an introduction to some horse breeds. So there's many different types of horse breeds that I'm going to tell you about, and I can tell you for a fact that I do not know all of them. And I'm just going to list off some of the basic breeds that are pretty common and some of the details and features about these breeds. So to begin, there is the American Miniature Horse. American Miniature Horses are no bigger than a large dog. They're a miniature version of a well-balanced horse possessing conformation characteristics that are found in most equine breeds. Miniature horses can be found in a rainbow of different colors and types. And currently, the smallest horse in the world is a tiny paint stallion named Einstein. And he is 14 inches tall and weighs a little bit over 6 pounds. And coming second smallest would be Thumbelina, who's about 17 inches tall. And although I've not had the pleasure of seeing Einstein, I have seen Thumbelina at a county fair many years ago. But she used to be the world's smallest horse before Einstein was born in 2010. And moving on to our next breed would be the American Quarter Horse. If you've ever seen a horse in a rodeo in one of the time events or watched any type of ranch work or a Western on television, 9 times out of 10 you've witnessed an American Quarter Horse. This breed is a very versatile breed and is used for many different disciplines. I'm definitely a fan of the easygoing and level-headed nature that they have. They're really great for everything. They're not spooky like some other breeds could be, and they just adapt to a lot of different situations very well. Then there is the American Paint Horse. While the colorful coat pattern is essential to the identity of the breed, American Paint Horses have strict bloodline requirements and a distinctive stock horse body, which is similar to the body style of American Quarter Horses. They're very close and have a lot in common. Paint Horses are oftenly mistakenly called Painted Horses, which is very close, but not quite. And if anyone has seen the movie Hidalgo, that horse is a paint horse. And to be more specific, he's a Sabino paint horse. And this is another breed that I have to say, I am in love with this breed. I've owned my paint thoroughbred cross for about 7 years now. And he is a wonderful horse. And I'm very glad I got him, although I didn't think I was going to end up with a paint horse, and I guess I had never really even considered that I would get a paint horse. And I found him, and he is amazing, and they are very easygoing, just like the American Quarter Horses are. Moving on, there is the breed Arabian. And currently, it's one of the more popular breeds in America. They have an incredible amount of energy, they're very intelligent, and have a gentle disposition that allows riders to excel in most equine sports and activities. Today, Arabian horses spend as much time on the trail as they do in the horse show ring, as well as other competitive events. Although these horses do have a gentle disposition and can also be very high-strung and hyper, which can sometimes make working with them a little bit difficult because they are just ready to go all the time. And next is another breed that's a little bit high strung as well, which is the American Saddlebred. The American Saddlebred is the epitome of the show horse. He carries himself with an attitude. A lot of people would call it class, and they have a presence. And if you saw one, you would understand more what I meant, but they definitely have a quality and style to them that is different than other breeds. They have very distinguished movement, and they are ideal They're a, what's the way to say this? They're a picture perfect horse. They're very well proportioned and they're beautiful horses. Moving forward, there is also Belgian horses. Today's Belgians are big and powerful horses that still retain some of the old style looking Belgians with the very drafty center to them, and they're very tall. They have very thick legs, a lot of bone and heavy muscling, and they have a very also calm disposition, which was also possessed by the early style Belgians. They're very easy keepers, they're good at shipping, and they're very willing to work. An interesting fact about Belgians is that unlike most other breeds, they grow until they're 6 years old, and most horses grow until they're three, so they have a much longer span to grow. And I know our vaulting team, we got a Belgian when she was 5 years old, and she was, I want to say she was about 17 hands when we got her. And a hand is a way that horse people use to measure horses, and a hand is about 4 inches. So she was about 17 hands when we got her, and within her last year of growing, she grew almost another hand, which is, it doesn't sound like that big of a difference, but it is a very big difference when they're already that tall. There's also Clydesdale horses, and I know everybody knows the beloved Budweiser horses. They're popular with carriage services. The Clydesdale is well suited for the job and always attracts a lot of public admiration. Street parades are not complete without a Clydesdale in the parade, in my opinion. Under the saddle, Clydesdales excel in many different disciplines like dressage, hunter jumper, vaulting, as well as trail horses and therapeutic riding. They're a beautiful breed, and I know that I have always wanted a black and white Clydesdale, and hopefully someday I will have one of these amazing gentle giants. There is also, getting a little smaller than the Clydesdale, there's the Connemara pony. Connemaras are a very suitable horse for children as well as adults. The Connemara has a natural ability to jump and has a very lean build, which makes them also suitable for dressage. As a show jumper or working hunter, eventing, western pleasure, endurance, or driving, the Connemara ponies can do it all. I myself used to ride a little Connemara cross pony, and she could do it all. She was great at a bunch of different things, and she definitely taught me a lot. There's also the Warm Blood, which is a very versatile breed, mostly used as performance horses, and they excel mostly at the Grand Prix level. They're attractive, agreeable, and very good-natured. Famous for their soundness and athleticism, Warm Bloods are winners under flags of many different nations in national competitions. They are a fantastic breed to work with, and they are also very beautiful, and they're a lot taller than what I previously was talking about, the ponies. They are up with the size of a lot of the draft horses. There's also the Irish Sport Horse. Irish Sport Horses are very athletic, and they have an amazing jumping ability. And the Irish Sport Horse is actually a cross between two different breeds. They are part Irish Draft and part Thoroughbred, which in that sense, they have the best of both worlds, which makes them easy to excel at a lot of different disciplines. There are Morgan horses. The Morgan horse is a free-moving and calm under Western tack, and also elegant when ridden under English. Its soundness, power, and agility make it a good choice for many different, many different disciplines, but especially the driving discipline, which I will talk about in my next segment. They're very popular there. They're very reliable, loyal, and they are very willing to please. And next, there is the National Show Horse. the national show horse represent a harmony of two very distinctive breeds, the Arabian and the American saddlebred, which I talked about both of those earlier. The national show horses are known in the industry as a breed of excitement and versatility. And as I have mentioned in a previous show, the first horse that I owned, Missy, was a national show horse, and she was definitely full of life and very beautiful and had a very sweet disposition. There's also the Oldenburg. In an international dressage arena, Oldenburgs have dominated for a very long period of time. They're also well known in the jumping arenas around the world. Oldenburgs are mainly used as dressage and jumping horses at very high levels, and their appearance is accentuated by the kind eyes that mirror their calm nature. And I can vouch for this. One of our vaulting horses, who is on the verge of retirement, is an Oldenburg. He's calm, kind, and forgiving, and not to mention he lets us vault on him, which is in and of itself quite amazing that a horse would allow us to do that. And the last breed I am going to talk about is the Thoroughbred. Blessed with agility, grace, speed, stamina, and courage, Thoroughbreds are ideally suited for a number of different disciplines beyond the racetrack, because that's what most people know Thoroughbreds for. They compete at high levels of international competitions, including eventing, show jumping, and dressage, and make outstanding hunter jumpers, steeplechasers. A lot of people also use them for timed events like barrel racing. And some famous Thoroughbreds would include Man of War, which a lot of people have heard of, Seabiscuit, Secretariat, and War Admiral. And those are all racehorses that have won numerous races around the world. And that is going to sum it up for my first segment on some basic breeds. Just remember, you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Hello, I'm back for my second section with when I'm going to talk to you about different equine disciplines. And this is DJ Detour, and you are listening to radio.dominican.edu. So there's many different types of equine disciplines, and I'm going to do my best to cover as many as possible. And when speaking generally, there's two different types of riding, English and Western. English and Western have two noticeably different styles of tack and appearance of riding. English has generally more impulsion and forwardness for most of the disciplines. On the other hand, Western is a little bit slower and flatter and smoother than the English discipline is. They both take an amazing amount of talent and skill, and I would like to say that through equestrian history, there's been at least a little bit of friction between the two different disciplines, generally speaking. And I would like, as my own disclaimer, to say that I've ridden in both English and Western disciplines, and I love many of the different types. And one isn't any easier than the other, and they're all a lot of fun and very unique. And I'm going to start with three disciplines that have successfully made it to the Olympics, which would be dressage, show jumping, and cross country. The combination of the three is called three-day eventing. And if you're competing in the Olympics, you're required to compete in all three, which is quite a challenge. It's hard enough to attempt to master one discipline, let alone three, and that's with the same horse and rider team combination. So, for dressage requires the horse and rider to combine the strength and agility of gymnastics with the elegance and beauty of ballet. The result is truly the best blend of the sport and art. The highlight of a dressage competition is the musical freestyle, in which the rider creates and choreographs to music, and it's an original ride of compulsory figures and movements. Although in the Olympic competitions, they only execute a set pattern, which is still beautiful to watch, but not even close to as cool as it is to watch the originally choreographed routines to music. Next, there is show jumping as the second event that has made it to the Olympics. In a jumping competition, the horse and rider are tested under various conditions of a course and its obstacles. It's intended to demonstrate the horse's freedom, energy, skill, and speed, and obedience in jumping, as well as the rider's horsemanship. Show jumping is a member of the English family discipline, as well as dressage is also a member of the English family. And next, there is cross country. Cross country is a test in which endurance, jumping ability, and speed is tested as a horse and rider negotiate a course of fixed obstacles set on varied terrain, usually measuring between 2 to 4 miles. And jumps can vary from water jumps, logs, brush jumps, squeeze jumps, which is a much smaller in width jump, so it's a lot of horses really dislike them. There's also creek jumps and many more. And this discipline is not judged like show jumping is show jumping. They look at the position of the rider. In opposition, cross country, they're not looking at the position of the rider, but they are judging you on the speed that the course is completed and how many refusals and unclean jumps there are. And moving on to other equestrian sports, which can be competed from beginning levels all the way up to the World Equestrian Games, which I also may refer to as WEG. And WEG is basically the Olympics of the equestrian world, since not all of these different sports have made it to the Olympics quite yet. Hopefully someday they will. And the first would be hunter jumper, which is similar to show jumping, but slightly different. Hunter over fences is judged on performance and soundness. Judges are looking for a good jumping style, quality, looks, and movement, as well as willingness and manners, and if the horse and rider are a good match. And show jumping, the course is there's a lot of abrupt turns and rollbacks, and it's a little bit tighter and faster moving. Hunter jumper, there's more straight lines and diagonal lines, and it's a much slower pace, which makes it a little bit more fun to watch. It's a little bit calmer than show jumping is. And next, I'm going to move on to kind of an umbrella term, rodeo. Professional rodeo consists of rough stock events and timed events. The rough stock events are bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, and bull riding, or a couple of them. And timed events are steer wrestling, team roping, tie down roping, barrel racing, and steer roping. And those are definitely not listing all of them. Another event that you can see sometimes in rodeos, but not always, is called team penning. And team penning is a fast-paced event that gives a team of 2 to 3 riders on horseback a minute to 90 seconds to separate a specific cow from a herd of cattle. And they have to move that cow from one end of the arena to the other end of the arena into a pen. And once the cow is in the pen, you put your arm up, your time is called, and then the single cow that you have separated out will go back to its herd, and so on and so forth. Calf roping. The goal of this event is, well, it's a timed event, and the rider has to catch a calf by throwing a loop of rope over the cow's neck, dismount their horse, run to the calf, and restrain it by tying 3 legs. When the tie is complete, the roper will raise their hand to signal the stop of the clock. Barrel racing is primarily a rodeo event for women, combining the horse's athletic ability and the rider's horsemanship skills in order to safely and successfully maneuver through a cloverleaf pattern around 3 barrels in the center of the arena. In timed rodeo events, the purpose is to make the run as fast as possible while attempting to not knock anything over or go off course, which sometimes can be very difficult. And other events, and barrel racing is encompassed under Gymkhana events, which also include pole bending, keyhole, single stake, double stake, big T. And these are all different types of timed events that include different patterns with barrels and poles. Reining. Reining consists of a horse and rider combination, and you're required to run one of several approved patterns, which all include small circles and large circles at varying speeds, flying lead changes, rollbacks, and spins, which is 360-degree turns. It's very cool to watch. And this event is scored on smoothness, finesse, attitude, quickness, and authority when performing these various maneuvers. Driving is another event. In pleasure driving competitions, horses or ponies are hitched to either antique vehicles or antique replicas, and the classes can be divided depending on the type of the vehicle, the size of the animal, and the number of animals that are pulling the vehicle. There's singles, pairs. There's also one called unicorn, which is when one horse is in front of another horse. And there's also, that's just one. There's also timed driving events as well. And next, there is polo. And polo is a team sport that's played on horseback, in which the objective is to score goals against the opposing team. And players are holding a mat. It's like a long-handled mallet. And the horses are traditionally ponies, so they're a little bit smaller, which makes it easier for them to be able to reach the ground. And they are very well-trained. They can stop and turn on a dime and are very quick over short distances. And it's a really interesting, fast-paced thing to watch. I haven't gotten to watch it for myself, but I've talked to people who've watched it, and I've heard it's quite interesting. And there is also, it's a little bit different than other equestrian sports, but there is vaulting. And vaulting is a competitive discipline where both gymnastic and dance elements are combined and performed to music on a cantering horse. And it's a very engaging competition for people to watch because there's some really cool moves that people do. And to kind of explain a little bit more about that, there is a person in the center of the arena who is the lunger, and they are holding a lunge line, which is a 30-foot line that's attached to a horse that is cantering in a circle around them. And the vaulter or team of vaulters, depending on what event you are involved in, will run out to the horse and mount the horse at the canter and do whatever event they are doing. There's compulsories, which are 6 set moves that everybody does and is scored on. And there's also freestyles, which are exactly what they sound like. You get to pick your music and do a bunch of different really cool moves within your level. And I've actually been vaulting for about 7 years now, and it is a really cool sport, and definitely there's an unmatched amount of teamwork that you have to, it's a bond you have to form between yourself, the horse you're vaulting on, your lunger, as well as your other teammates, and it's a very gratifying and fun sport to do. And that is going to wrap it up for this segment. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. It's calling out your name. You always take it further than I ever can.
Just live inside my Cadillac. That is my shit. And I'll throw it up.
Throw that up.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
In my Cadillac, bitch. Can't see me through my tents. I'm riding real slow. And my paint wet, dripping, shining like my 24s. I don't got 24s. But I'm on those Vogues. That's those big white walls. Round them 100 spokes. Old school like old English in that brown paper bag. I'm rolling in that same whip that my granddad had. Hello, haters. Damn, y'all mad. 30K on the caddy. Now how backpack rap is that?
In some shit Bernie Mac would have been prouder. Looking down from heaven like damn, that's stylish. Smiling, don't pay attention to the mileage. Can I hit the freeway illegally going 120? Easy, we've been in and out of the traffic. They cannot catch me, I'm smashing, I'm ducking, bucking. I'm out here, I'm looking fucking fantastic. I am up in the classic, now I know what it's like under the city lights. Riding into the night, driving over the bridge. The same one we walk across as kids. Knew I'd have a whip, but never one like this. Old school, old school. Candy paint. Yeah, I'm from Seattle, there's hella Honda Civics, I couldn't tell you about paint either. But I really wanted the caddy, so I put in the hours and moved them over to the dealer, and I found the car gene. It was a bargain with the skeezer, got the keys, and as I was leaving, I started screaming.
I got that off-black Cadillac, midnight drive, got that gas pedal, lean back, taking my time, I'm rolling up, roof off, letting in sky, the city never looked so bright.
Backwoods and dope, white hoes
in the backseat snorting coke. She doing line at the line like she writing rhymes. I had her inhaling my love trying to blow her mind. Cadillac pimping, my uncle was on 14, I sold his keys, me and my niggas was gone. Stealing portions of his liquor, water in his Patron. Driver smiling like I won a fucking lottery, homes. Tires with the spokes on it, in the Vogue too. Mustard and mayonnaise, keeping the buns all on my dogs. Hanging out the window, youngest, we was frontin' like we bow. Tryna fuck them all, never fucked the whip, see what's poppin' at the mall. Need a bad bitch, slap a booty with my paws. Reconstruct the pussy, I was tearing down the walls. I'm motherfuckin' all. Some sweating sides, had a hypnotize. Grip the leather steering wheel where I grip the thighs. See the lust stuck up in.
All right, we're back with my show Behind the Bit, and I am DJ Detour, and you are listening to radio.dominican.edu. So for this segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about some common foot problems that happen with horses and some causes, some symptoms, and the treatment and prevention for these different problems. So one thing that can happen is thrush, which is something that happens very commonly. And as we are currently experiencing some rain outside, you know, I'm probably going to go out to the barn and my horse, it's likely that he could have thrush, which it's very easy to deal with. But it happens a lot of the times when you are dealing with dirtier stabling conditions that are combined with, it can be combined with a couple different things. If your horse has a really long untrimmed hoof, it can happen how bacteria will get in their hoof because it is long and untrimmed. And since it will stay in there, it's going to cause a lot of bacteria to grow and an infection. But it can also just happen if your horse is out there standing in the mud, like a lot of them are at this moment in time. And some of the symptoms that you will see are that thrush is not going to make your horse lame. That's not something that's going to happen very, I've never actually seen that happen ever. But you will, when you pick up your horse's hoof to clean out their hooves, it smells terrible. And there's a black, like gooey material that is in the crevices next to their frog. And it, when you pick a horse's foot up and there is a triangle like mountain, I guess you could call it, in the center of their foot, that is their frog. And the frog is very sensitive, and a lot of times where the thrush will grow and the bacteria will get caught is at the base of the frog where there's an indent in their hoof. So that will happen a lot of times, and the treatment for this is you remove, if possible, however much you can remove of the tissue that's got all this nasty smelling black bacteria grossness on it. And then you would use a thrush treatment. And there is a bunch of different types of thrush treatment. And in my next segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about some product reviews of thrush treatments. And a lot of them contain, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce this, but copper nanthate, as well as iodine. And there's different ratios of it in the different products. And another way to prevent this from happening is obviously clean your horse's feet on a regular basis if it's possible. Don't have them standing out in the mud if that's possible. And another trick that I have learned, which sounds a little bit interesting, but it made sense to me after I thought about it for a little while, is when you pick your horse's feet when it's muddy and gross outside and you can't really do anything about the fact that your horse is out there standing in the mud, is you go to the store and get some Lysol, some aerosol Lysol. A lot of people say lemon Lysol works better, and I'm not really sure why the lemon would really matter. But it is a disinfectant, and if you just, after you pick your horse's feet out, spray on some of that Lysol and it will help keep their feet cleaner, and then you won't have to deal with thrush so often, which is a nice thing because nobody wants to deal with that. Another thing that can happen is white line disease. And white line disease is an infection in the hoof wall. And the hoof wall is, if you look at a horse's hoof, the outside of their hoof, what's visible to your eye when they're standing is their hoof wall. and it's caused by a type of fungus that can grow, and that often happens in more humid areas. So it's something you might see more during the summertime here, but it's not fun when your horse gets it. And the things that you will be able to see if your horse has white line disease is a separation, a wall separation. So the outside of their hoof will look like it's starting to separate, and you'll see some brown specks near the top of their hoof. And they will also a lot of times go lame, and lame is when, you know, they're limping or unable to put weight on one of their feet. And the other thing is that their hoof will not hold a shoe. So when your farrier, which is a horseshoer, goes to put your horse's shoes on, if your horse wears shoes, they're going to nail it into your horse's hoof, and it is going to fall right back out because their hoof wall is falling apart, which is very unfortunate. And the treatment for this is you have to remove the infected amount of their hoof wall with a straw. And a lot of times people do that with really strong fungicides. And a lot of times they will use special shoes after that. One of them is called a heart bar shoe. And essentially what a heart bar shoe and some other types of special shoes that they use, what it will do is it'll create it so that the shoe can stay on without relying on the nails through the horse's hoof wall. And a way to avoid this is not to excessively wash the hoof, because you don't want it to be damp and moist all the time. And also maintaining balanced nutrition and good stabling hygiene. So not having your horse stand in conditions that are unclean. Sole bruises are another thing that can happen. And this is an injury to the sole of their hoof, which I talked about the frog a minute ago. The sole is the rest of the part of their hoof other than the frog. So a lot of times horses will get sole bruises by stepping on sharp rocks or gravel, or they could have stuff packed in their shoes and they could continue to be walking on it. So that's like if we had a rock in our shoe and we kept walking on it for, let's say, a week, that would not feel very good to the bottom of our foot. And for this one, you'll be able to see red spots, and it may become super moist in the place that they have the sole bruise. They'll also appear to be lame, so they won't want to put a lot of weight on that foot. And the treatment for this is to clean out their shoe. You can also, if it's bad enough, there's pressure pads that you can put between the horse's shoe and the bottom of the horse's hoof. So it's kind of like a plastic shield for their foot, so they're not going to be able to step on anything else that would irritate their sole bruise. But the main thing that they need is time for it to heal. And like I said, yeah, the prevention for that would be getting protective pads, which might be a little excessive because sole bruises don't happen very often, but it is a preventative measure. Another thing that can happen is navicular. And navicular, there's multiple different ways that a horse can get navicular, but a lot of times it is from a neglected long hoof, which is when their hoof goes untrimmed. And most horses get their hooves trimmed every 6 to 8 weeks. And horses that have shoes will get their shoes put on at that time. And horses who go barefoot and do not wear shoes will just have their feet trimmed down at that time. And so from neglected long hooves, or if the angle of their hoof is wrong, because one of the things that can happen with farriers that are inexperienced, or maybe hopefully, but it happens sometimes, if they don't care as much, the way that a horse's hoof is naturally is going to align all the bones in their leg. So if you have a farrier that goes in there and messes with the angle of their foot for whatever reason, it's going to mess up all their bones and all their joints in the way that they line up. So that's another thing that could potentially cause navicular. And the symptoms that you'll see for this are pain in the area where the navicular bone is, and that is at the bottom of their leg above their hoof. So you're going to see a lot of pain there. They're going to be lame, and they also, they call it a sawhorse stance, but they're essentially, when they stand still, they're not going to want to put weight on that foot at all. And there's different treatments for this as well that include a lot of specialty shoes. But one of the main preventative things would be to avoid purchasing a horse that has conformation that could predispose them for navicular. And a horse's composition is the way that all their bones line up throughout their entire body. And sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, if they would be predisposed to it or not. And also to make sure that your horse gets their shoes put on every 6 to 8 weeks, or their feet trimmed every 6 to 8 weeks. And the last thing I'm going to talk about are abscesses. And abscesses in the foot are an infection in the foot that could be caused by things like stone bruises, laminitis, which is another in-depth disease that I'm not going to go too much into right now, or wet conditions, or conditions with a lot of bacteria. And when your horse has an abscess, they're going to be lame. You're going to, if you put your hand on top of wherever the abscess is, which sometimes you can't see because they're down so deep, it's going to be hotter than the rest of their foot. And also, when an abscess pops, there's going to be stuff draining out of it. And the treatment of this would be to locate the where the abscess is and to drain it. And then after you've drained the abscess, usually what a vet will tell you to do is to soak the area with Epsom salt and hot water. And they will usually have you do this for 20 minutes at a time, and it could be up to 4 times a day, which is a lot of work, especially when your horse doesn't want to put their foot in a bucket. I've had that happen before. And so after you locate and drain it, you have to remove all the tissue. And another thing that people will do is use a poultice pack on the bottom of their hoof that will protect it from any other bacteria or anything else that could get in there and possibly re-irritate the area. And a preventative measure for this is, again, make sure your horse gets their feet done on a regular basis. And make sure that you have good conditions at your stable. There's not a lot of things that would cause bacteria on the ground. Your horse is well cleaned up after, and that you clean their feet out on a regular basis. So this is DJ Detour, and I just talked about some common foot problems and solutions. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu, and that's going to wrap it up for this segment.
You ran into the night from all you had. Found yourself a path upon the ground. You ran into the night, you can't be found. But this is your heart. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Pumps through your veins. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? If you had your gun, it at the sky, why, to see where it would fall. Oh, will you come down at all? If you had your gun, would you shoot it at the sky?
Feel it, can you feel it?
Hello, this is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And for my last segment today, I'm going to do some product reviews. First, I wanted to talk about thrush treatments because we just talked about some different foot problems that can occur, and thrush is definitely one of them. So there's a lot of different types of thrush treatments, and it's definitely hard to pick. If you go into a feed store and you're trying to look at all these different types of thrush treatment, it's like, why are there so many? Some of the common ones would be Horseshoer Secret, Thrush Off, Thrush Buster, No Thrush, Mane and Tail Thrush Remedy, and Copper Talks, and those are just to list a few. And I've used quite a few of them. I think my favorite would have to be Thrush Buster, and it is a small container and it's purple, and you only have to use a little bit of it, but it goes a very long way. And I think I've had the same small tiny container of Thrush Buster for like 3 years because you really don't use a lot of it. And there's also a lot of people really like Thrush Off. It's a Well Horse product, and they have some other really good products. So, and their product is definitely an all natural good product. Copper Talks is another very commonly used product, and it is in a white and green container, and it's been around forever. Mane and Tail is a very common brand. A lot of people may have heard of it because they do sell the Mane and Tail shampoo and conditioner at grocery stores now for people, which I will tell you is the exact same one that we sell in the feed stores for horses. And it does work great, and I have used it on myself, actually. And there's also a newer, I think it's been around about a year now, new thrush product, which is called No Thrush. And it's very interesting because it is a white powder, and the rest of the thrush treatments are all, most of them are purple or green, and they are liquids. They actually have a couple that are aerosol sprays now. But one of the main things that I thought was really interesting about the No Thrush is that it's not going to stain your clothes, because all of the other thrush products, if you get them on your clothes, say goodbye, because that stain is never coming out. So it's a very interesting product that they came out with. It's all natural, and it's also a very good preventative for thrush. And I've heard a lot of actually really good reviews about the No Thrush product, and people saying that it really does work, because what I was worried about is that if you put a powder on your horse's foot, that, you know, the liquid seems like it really soaks in, but that the powder would just fall off. But from what I've heard, that's completely wrong, and that it actually really soaks into their foot well. So that was a pleasant surprise for me. So those are a few of the thrush treatments. And I also wanted to review some fly sprays, because right now we are in the middle of a drought, and before we know it, all the flies are going to be back, and I'm not looking forward to it because it sucks when all the flies come back. So a couple of different fly sprays would be Bronco Gold Repellex, Wipe, Ultra Shield, Esprit, Flix, Endure, and Tri-Tech. And fly sprays, you can get one of two different varieties, which is the pesticide type fly sprays, which work very effectively. And there's also the natural fly sprays, which contain things like citronella oil that are supposed to be better for the environment and also repel flies. And to begin with, for some of the pesticide based fly sprays, there's Bronco and Bronco Gold, which are Farnam products, and they are extremely popular because they are not very expensive. And what I did find is that the Bronco and the Bronco Gold are the exact same thing, although the Bronco Gold is in a different bottle and is more expensive. They are identical products. And There's the Repellex and the Wipe, which are also a Farnam product, and they are pretty much the next step up from Bronco and Bronco Gold. And they are very popular. And Repellex actually also makes a lotion, so you can put it on your horse's face and around places like their eyes where you can't spray fly spray on their faces. So, and I've heard a lot of really positive things about the Repellex lotion. And there is the Ultra Shield, which is a very popular product. And the Ultra Shield has a couple of different varieties of their product. They have the regular Ultra Shield Black, Ultra Shield Blue, which is supposed to be waterproof or water resistant, the Ultra Shield Red, which is a broad spectrum, and also the Ultra Shield Green, which is has no pesticides in it. And pretty much the Ultra Shield Black, Blue, and Red, all from what I have found in using them, work about the same, and they work pretty well. As for the green one, it works pretty well for a natural fly spray, which definitely does not work as well as a pesticide fly spray. And it's kind of, you know, the balancing of, you know, I don't want to be breathing in pesticides, but I also don't want my horse and myself to be getting attacked by flies. And that is very unpleasant. And I know if any of you guys have been bit by a horse fly, is not very fun. I've seen them draw blood from horses, so it's kind of hard to make that decision. But there are some other natural fly sprays that work a little bit better. There is the what is now called Esprit, and it used to be called Larry's fly spray. And if you and it comes in a concentrated bottle and also in a ready to use. And if you get the concentrate and you concentrate it more than it tells you to, it actually works pretty well. And there's also, for the last two, Endure and Tri-Tech, which, similar to the Bronco and Bronco Gold, they are actually the same product packaged differently, made by the same company. And they both on the bottle say that they are 14-day prevention, which is not true. I have not found a fly spray that works longer than maybe a half a day. But my favorite, and the one that I use during the summer on a daily basis, is either the Tri-Tech or the Endure. They work really well. They are more expensive, but it really makes a difference in the amount of flies that are going to be all over you and irritating your horse and getting in their eyes. And so if it, you know, for me and my horse, I choose to use the Tri-Tech or the Endure. And last, I wanted to talk about a couple of my favorite products. The first of which is called Vetresyn, and they are made by a company called Innovasyn, which makes a product for people as well as for animals. And I believe the product for humans is called Purisyn, which I haven't actually seen in a store before. But Vetresyn is an environmentally friendly product. It doesn't sting, it reduces irritation, it doesn't harm any of the healthy tissue if you spray it on healthy tissue. It's also non-toxic and does not include any antibiotics. And what Vetresyn does is it replicates what your body makes to, or an animal's body makes, to help heal a wound. And they've got a big long list of stuff on the front of their product that it can treat, which would be cleaning wounds, hot spots, scratches, skin rashes, lacerations, skin ulcers, cuts, burns, irritated skin, sores, and even post-surgical sites. And you can also use this product in animals' eyes. The feed store that I work at, we've actually had people come in and get it for themselves and use it on pink eye, which I thought was very impressive. I know I've used the product Vetresyn on myself, and it actually works really incredibly well. But that was definitely an amazing thing that she said it got rid of pink eye for her, and I thought that was very interesting. And it can be used, it's packaged to be used on a variety of different types of animals, from livestock, horses, dogs and cats, birds, reptiles, and even exotic animals. So that is definitely one of my favorite products. And I know I have some in my truck and at the barn, and I've got a whole bunch of it and I love it. And the last one that I wanted to talk about was Vetrolin Shine, which is a ready-to-use coat shine for horses. And they use salon-quality silicone conditioners, vitamin B5, and sunscreen. And it also detangles and helps prevent breakage in your horse's hair. And I've used that on my horse since I bought him. And he is a very bright, almost orange color. And he's a paint. And during the summer, he usually, his color will fade out. But when I have used Vetrolin Shine, his color doesn't fade out. And it's really awesome. And to be completely honest, I've actually used that stuff in my hair as well. And it really does make your hair a lot softer. And it's a really cool product. And it's also not very expensive. So that today I have talked to you about some common horse breeds, some of the basic disciplines, some foot problems and solutions, and I did some product reviews for you. This is DJ Detour with my show Behind the Bit. You can catch it next Wednesday from 3 to 4 only on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.